Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic.
All right, so this is today's event about individuation, which is a key central concept of Jung, the famous Swiss psychologist. And it has also been a pretty dirty trick of mine, because when I have all the other events and I talk about a topic, I always have a very hard time to conclude everything, to bind everything together. It's alchemy, or it's symbols, or it's mother, father, child. I need a certain point where I can bring everything together and have some kind of logical conclusion. And the number one trick for me has been using individuation and then bring it back to the, oh yeah, that's, by the way, how Jung sees individuation and what it means for the personal life. Because I've noticed that a lot of people are interested in this really practical part of Jung. The immediate question is, okay, how can I implement this in my life? How could I use this to develop myself psychologically or understand what's happened with me psychologically? And so it's always a very neat point to end. And in this case, it won't be the end, it will be the beginning, and it will be the whole event, only talking about individuation, what Jung said about individuation. And I have some quotes to give already a little bit of feeling for it, what Jung understood under it. So, Jung, I use the term individuation to denote the process by which a person becomes a psychological individual, that is a separate, indivisible unity or whole. We could therefore translate individuation as come to selfhood or self-realization. The process of individuation, the step-by-step development of the self from an unconscious state to a conscious state. And here, there are already a lot of concepts there that need some unpacking and that will all be unpacked. But some key words that you should keep in mind for today is really this concept of wholeness. To create, no, not really create, but to strive to something that is whole and also individual in the sense that it is separated from collective things, or let's say not identical with collective things. And then the self-realization aspect, the realization of the self, of the highest thing that is within oneself, which is basically everything that one could be. So individuation, now that we heard what it roughly is, so how does it look like? Jung saw individuation as a completely natural process that basically happens by itself. The example he has is of the tree seed of an oak tree. When you have the seed, it's already the whole tree in it. It's already an image that the seed is striving towards. And if you let the seed grow normally, naturally, in the right environment, then it will become a tree. But the idea is that the tree is already in the seed in the beginning. Even when you cannot see it, it's like an invisible image that the plant is striving towards. And he says that every animal, every living being has this image inside of itself where it's striving towards to reach this goal of realization, of self-realization, the self then being this image and this goal. So because it's natural, this basically means it's happening whether you want it or not. So for him, this process happens psychologically, but also bodily, all by itself. If you think about it, that a human being starts in the womb with only a single cell and then becomes two cells, four cells, and so on, and then becomes a fetus and then a baby and then grows up. This process is already happening without interference of consciousness. It's happening by itself. The body just does it. It tries to realize bodily a human being. And the same with animals. So animals develop also from small to big, and then smaller and then dead, all by themselves, without being there really this trace of consciousness that is in human beings. And Jung sees this development not only in the bodily sphere, but also psychological sphere, mainly situated in the second half of life, which is his, let's say, favorite part of life. And he has pretty strong reasons for that. So the second part of life for Jung begins end of 30 with 40. He even says life begins with in the second part of life. Everything before is research, field research. And the reason for that is in the first part of life, you're pretty much driven by collective factors, or factors that he calls collective. There are certain bodily needs as to growing up, right? And finding a partner and starting a family, and the psychological needs of establishing oneself in the world, to have an education, to get a career, to be integrated in society. So this is not really, let's say, individual. It's collective in the sense that the body does what it's supposed to be doing. It's growing up, trying to grow up, and a person tries to conform to society and to follow the paths that are basically given by society. When you have a child, then in school, then they're maybe learning maybe a trade or going to university, and then they're in a job and so on. And it's all collective in the sense that everything is given from outside and pretty much ignorant of the individual itself. So the rules are the rules for everyone, and the development is pretty much the same for everyone. What's happening there is that already important part is establishing itself in the psyche, which is ego and consciousness. Ego and consciousness being the directed part of the psyche. So what makes human beings unique is that we can decide to do things or not to do things. And this is a will aspect that Jung sees situated in the ego and consciousness. So ego experiences the world and decides what to do, and consciousness is of the way to act in it by gathering skills and information and experiences and to utilize that in a very strong degree. And in that sense, consciousness is very directed toward goals. And these goals in the first part of life are pretty collective. Finding a partner is a collective endeavor, to have a career, to be established in the world as a person with skills and knowledge and so on, that are also compensated for in a collective sense. So what happens in the first part is that a certain version of oneself is established. This is a collective version. And everything else gets repressed, suppressed. And this is necessary because the world is complicated, the psychology is complicated, and to act in a directed manner means to ignore a lot of stuff, which is repression. And this is okay in the first part of life for Jung, because it's necessary to build this foundation, to get accommodated to society and learn the rules and learn all the skills that are necessary. But what happens in the second part of life with this shift is that suddenly the rest of society that is there starts to interfere and say, okay, yeah, now you have established yourself, but there's way more to the world and to yourself than just this very nice persona that you built for yourself, the very nice life that you built for yourself. So this was necessary. It was a little bit like a diet. It's for a certain goal, but it's not the way to live your whole life and to be an individual. So here, these psychological needs come up. And this is where Jung situates the creation of culture and of cultural values and of art. Because suddenly people become very much aware of their psychological troubles and their unease and of the more complicated nature of things, that things are not one-sided and they can no longer be repressed. So this complexity comes up and it needs to be dealt with. And he sees the way how people orientate themselves in the world mainly determined by four functions, which are thinking, feeling, sensation, and intuition. And those are different ways how information comes from the outside or from the inside, so the outside world or the inside psychological world, to consciousness. And part of personality is, which is your favorite function? So you come into the world and you already have a favorite one. Let's say it's thinking. So how the world is perceived and how it's acted upon is in a thinking manner. And this already suppresses other functions like feeling, giving a value judgment on things. How do you stand to something? So if you're very prone on thinking, it's stereotypical, this scientist who does things without thinking, whether it should be done in a moral sense, but rather, it's possible, so it should be done. When you have this as your superior function, which means that you are already biased, prone to do it that way, it's then also the most developed function because you use it the most like a muscle. So it's very likely part of your persona. It's the reason why you've been successful. This is what society gives you money for, or which brought you a partner because you're very good at that one thing. But the psyche is more complex than this one thing. You have feeling, you have sensation, you have intuition. And these have to be dealt with. So in the second part is a point where suddenly becomes clear that the superior function is not enough, that this is a point where the superior function fails. And this means suddenly the thing you can do best and the thing that you're valued for the most and with which you've been the most successful suddenly falls away and does not help you at all. It's like a tool that's not sharp anymore, or a drill that don't have batteries anymore. And it leaves one pretty much empty-handed because that's the one thing that's always been there and it's always in use. And suddenly all those other strange things come up, things like feeling and intuition or sensation, the different ways of perceiving the world and acting in the world, which are strange and cannot be substituted by thinking. You cannot think yourself out of a feeling situation. So you rather have to learn all the weak sides that have been ignored half the life. It's like you're using your right hand your whole life and suddenly it's not available anymore and you have to use your left hand. So everything feels strange and weird. And this is the way to go. So this is the correct thing that should happen, because what this individuation process that's happening in the background is striving toward is this idea of wholeness, of collecting all the parts within oneself that belong together. So you come into the world as a baby and you're completely unconscious. It takes years until a child is really conscious to say, I am and I want something. And this is very often the point where a child discovers the power of no, because suddenly it can assert its will by just saying no. And this is a reason why teenagers rebel, to remove themselves from the family home, to establish themselves separate of this family unit. And this collection part is that's already there from the beginning, same as in the tree is already in the seed. It just needs the time aspect and it needs to gather all those outside things like nutrients, and to stay in the metaphor of the tree, to really establish itself. So it's this collection process. And here suddenly all those problems come up, that you have opposites of things that you have that cannot be brought together. Suddenly you have problems you cannot solve, and that they are just opposites that are acting against each other and that are hard to reconcile. And this is the beginning of the journey, which is taking people through their psyche. So Jung saw the psyche layered with the ego and consciousness, which I already talked about at the top, let's say at the sunny side, where everything is clear and structured and is already explored, is already known. And below is a personal unconscious, the unconscious being the things that are not conscious, that have not been integrated yet into consciousness, which is basically everything in the world. But there's a layer which is the personal unconscious, and that's the first layer right under consciousness, because those are all the things you have not dealt with about yourself. It could be trauma, it could be shame, it could be guilt. This is a realm of the shadow figure, which is all the disagreeable things one has about oneself, but does not want to deal with. So it got repressed, which is in the beginning pretty smart, because it's the easiest way to establish something. When you start small, it's way easier than when you try to start with everything. So this is your first stepping stone to have an ego and consciousness that develop themselves by repressing everything else. So, but now the personal unconscious acts up and you have to go through there in your journey to individuate. And here it is necessary to basically be aware of that. So the unconscious, Jung describes very often also as the other. It's like a opposite partner in a play. What the ego and the consciousness is doing is to interact with it through different ways and different forms. If you go to this personal unconscious, it's then represented as a shadow. And the shadow very often is projected because if you repress the things that you don't want to know or want to deal with about yourself, it's still there. It's still in the background. And what happens is that it suddenly pops up everywhere outside in the outside world. He calls this projection. This means the things you don't want to deal with is suddenly outside and you see it there and you don't want to deal with it. So it's already negatively connotated. And this means that you have very strong, very negative opinions about happening, things that are happening outside, especially other people. And coming to terms with that is already a tremendous, let's say, moral effort to look into your enemy's eyes and to embrace it. Because at a certain point, it has to be realized that, oh, no, it's not the other person outside, which is a problem, but rather it's me and my unresolved issues that are the problem. And this is already incredibly hard and incredibly difficult to do, since everything about the shadow seems dark and negative and not good. He said, when you hit this layer of the personal unconscious, where the shadow is, this is a point where things suddenly come to a standstill. So, because now everything is in doubt. So you have already this problem that you become aware of all the complexity in the world and the complexity in your psyche. And you have suddenly now the shadow to deal with, which is also drawing everything into doubt. But having reached this makes one already, let's say, more individuated than being unconscious of the things happening. So somebody who is, let's say, seeing the negative in the world and being cynical is further in their development, let's say, as somebody who is completely unaware of things happening and is just not home. Let's say it like that. This is something that Jung stressed, that being in this rather negative and complicated situation is already a good sign. So it means that one has moved out, let's say, out of their hometown and into the wilderness, and being on their journey to connect back with nature and back what it means to be a human being. And this is something that Jung stresses very often, because he was a psychiatrist and he had a therapy with a lot of patients, that having negative feelings or being depressed is not necessarily a negative sign. That does not mean that somebody is broken, but rather that somebody has a problem that needs to be solved, that has to be dealt with, that has to be investigated and brought to light and to be contemplated. But this is the journey. So it's not, let's say, sunshine and roses, but really going into the belly of the beast and to find the demon one has one side of oneself and face them. So what is really interesting is, because most of us, of you, are European or let's say Western, and the mentality that the way how the shadow is dealt with is very strongly culturally predetermined. And the example is when you look at how in Western stories, in European stories, the dragon is dealt with as a creature. So the dragon has to be killed. Siegfried kills the dragon. St. Patrick kills all the snakes, which are dragons. It's this aspect of saying, okay, yeah, it's going to be killed. It's repressed now even more. It's separated instead of finding the common ground and integrated, because it's saying, oh, yeah, the dragon is actually me, or let's say the part of me that I don't want to deal with but should be part of me. In the East, it's rather a positive sign, the dragon. So the dragon is so far integrated, let's say culturally wise, according to Jung, that the positive aspects of this development are much more clearer than, let's say, in the West, where it's really this, oh, it's bad, it has to be killed and gotten rid of, and not to, hey, let's integrate it. So, but let's say dealing with the shadow and dealing with the other in general for Jung is a diplomatic negotiation process. So rather than killing the other, killing the shadow, it should be realized and integrated like, oh yeah, that's actually me, that's actually mine, and I should take care of that. And it's a constant, he says, negotiation, diplomacy, building a relationship with something that has been separated and also has been possibly acting up because it has been separated for so long. And let's say the shadow is dealt with this personal unconscious. Then we're hitting the collective unconscious, which is a completely different beast because everything in there is even stranger, as it is the collective unconscious that it's spanning the psyche of all the human beings that are currently in the world, has been in the past in the world, and also animals to a certain degree, as this is basically human nature. And this nature aspect for Jung is pretty important because for him, ego and consciousness, what it's doing, is striving towards something, this, let's say, simplification, abstraction of the world through rationality, removes one from the body and nature and everything. So it's rising up high and feels itself separated from everything else, but one is still connected through the body and through the psyche, deep down the collective unconscious, to the material and bodily and to nature. And there, the other takes a different form, not of the shadow, but of the anima or the animus, based on whether you're male or female, meaning that you're now encountering the opposite sex and the principles that are working there. So as a man, you suddenly start to encounter the feminine aspect in you, and as a woman, the masculine aspect. And there, everything is now even stranger because nothing is really related to you, but rather it is related to the very basic functions of the psyche. And this is why we have a lot of cultural products revolving around the collective unconscious as a kind of mapping mechanism of the experiences that people had and how they encountered the anima and the animus. So when you have a love story, that is other part and how to deal with it and how to experience it. But also mythological stories about gods or monsters to be educated through culture and cultural products, what awaits one on the journey. And the very difficult and important thing that Jung notes is in all those, let's say, stages or stations in the journey, it can become very easy to just identify with certain, let's say, emotions or with figures that come up. And he says, that's not very individual. It would be collective again, because in the collective unconscious, it's collective. So the anima or the animus, they are collective. And just following them and following the emotions that come up through the psyche just takes one along for the ride for different forces, which are highly impersonal and have no interest really in the individual and the person. So it's a really funny thing when for the outside world, this is pretty much clear that people say, nah, I want to be a free thinking individual and I don't want to be like a fashion victim, or I don't want to be a fanboy of something, or I don't want to be set by society what I should be, or by my family or by my employer or whatever, that there's already this sense of, okay, I have to separate myself from the structures that are existing outside. But for the internal, this does not exist at all. Like normally that to say, okay, yeah, maybe I should not be wrath, or maybe I should not be lust, or I should not be all those impersonal forces that exist, but because they are not integrated correctly, have an incredible influence on the person, can determine their life. But rather to say, okay, I need to separate also from those collective forces, not only from the outside, but also from the inside, to resist this kind of possession. This is incredibly hard, Jung says that, because the unconscious is constantly interfering. I don't know how many of you meditated before, but when you meditate, it's a really easy, insightful experience. Try to not think about something, or try to think about only one thing. to realize is that it only takes seconds for another thought to interfere, and you even lose the concept, the idea that you wanted to focus on one thing, because the next thing comes and you're right along. It's like trains crossing the whole time and you're hopping on the different trains, not realizing that you're not on the original train anymore. And this is the unconscious constantly interfering, trying to hijack. So ego and consciousness has to be strong to withstand that and learn how to deal with it. It then becomes negotiation and a little bit of jujitsu to redirect certain forces to bring them to a end that one wants to go at. And let's say it's finished with a shadow, which is already incredibly hard. And then the anima animus, they are integrated, which is even more difficult. Then what's there is the self, where the shadow is part of the self before. The anima animus are part of the self before. Also, the self being really this encompassing everything together, thing being existing. And the, Jung said the self is an so overwhelming experience that he saw the root of religious experiences really there. That when people have a religious experience of something they're at awe at, that is overwhelming, which is huge, that is the self, which is kind of romantic idea to say, oh, I'm experiencing everything that I could be, and I'm in awe. I'm in awe of all the things that I could be. And for him, the individuation process is this self-realization, the realization, manifestation of the self, to bring the self, this image of the oak tree that one has in, inside of oneself, into the world to establish that. So for him, it's this important aspect to get in contact with nature and touch nature. There has been this meme, I think from last year, where people spend so much time on the internet that they're being told, like, touch grass to go outside. And it's really this concept, okay, try to be in a natural environment and try to experience what it means to be a human being, because how human beings lived for a very long time is very different how we live today, or for Jung, even 100 years ago. And get into contact with that, but also get into contact with not only the nature outside, but the nature inside, which is dreams, fantasies, thoughts, emotions, to become aware of that, deal with that in a conscious manner, because individuation is a process that's happening by itself. But if you don't want only be along for the ride, which can be a very unpleasant ride if you're not aware of it, or you don't want to be part of it because you get dragged along whether you want it or not, nature is always stronger. One should be conscious of it and be aware of it and reflect. And this contact with nature is already revitalizing, Jung says, as it reminds the body and the psyche what it already knows. So that's a really fun thing. The individuation process happening to oneself, to the ego, to the consciousness, this is something completely new. Wow, that's never happened before. But in reality, this happened already. It's same as with the body. The body is prepared for so many different things, so many different situations that might not happen to you necessarily in your lifetime, but that are known to the body. That, for example, the body is perfectly willing to sacrifice limbs when it gets too cold, or how it will react when it does not get enough food, or there's too much heat, or anything, or, well, how to make new human beings, right? So the body is already prepared for that. For the body, this is nothing new. For the psyche deep inside, there's also nothing new, because it's this eternal repetition of individuation processes that happen so often that it's ingrained in the psyche and the body. But for the ego, which is just new and which is you and your individual life, this is the interesting thing happening. And in contrast to the body being like an animal with being small, growing up, and then getting small and dying, Jung saw the psyche in the individuation process growing like a tree, with the tree being really this plant of growing continuously and getting more and more, bigger and bigger. So there are not so many animals that get bigger with time, except crocodiles that I know of. For plants, it's different. For plants, they get bigger. So for him, that's a metaphor to use. So when you do this process and this path of turning inward of yourself, it's never a straight line. you described it more like a spiral, because in nature, nothing is like a straight line. It's a conscious concept that you have a straight line. Most in nature, nothing is straight. Everything is curved. Everything is moving. And in the same sense, the psychological development in individuation is this constant, not straight movement, movement in curves and in spirals and of detours that go up and down, because you're collecting everything of yourself and you're spread out everywhere. So you have to go everywhere. You have to go up, you have to go down. You have to start endeavors that never really come to fruition, but there's something along the way that's still picked up. And this is, again, not really about perfecting the human being or the psyche. It's becoming whole. It's not really about fame or recognition or anything. It's really becoming that one, what one is supposed to be, what nature intended one to be, and to become the self-manifestation. So what does one do? How does one go on this journey, and how does one follow this individuation path that is happening by itself, but one should still be along and do something consciously? For Jung, this really meant doing the next logical thing, the next step, the next necessary thing that is to do. So it's not to ignore everything and then strive for one thing, but rather to, okay, what is necessary now? And this already gives an indication where the unconscious wants one to go. So interest, fear, to having strong emotions about something, there's already like, oh, a little sign that, hey, let's investigate there. Why I am interested in that? Because there is something that inside oneself that is interested, and one should explore what it is. Because what consciousness is great at and what consciousness has as a duty is this reflective aspect, this differentiated aspect to take things apart and realize, oh, this is like this. And this is a little bit of tidying up, like Philip said in the room before, cleaning up the room, to have this whole mess, which is incomprehensible, of the unconscious, and to sort it, to not to clean it, but rather to bring it in a right context and frame of mind. So a lot is about experience. So Jung stresses this aspect. This is not an abstract thought process of individuation. It's really acting in the world, doing things. Because only that way you can experience yourself when you're in an unfamiliar situation, extreme fear, extreme joy, extreme tension, extreme relaxation. Then you can learn something about yourself, because you can be surprised about yourself, how you react to something if you're aware of it. If you're unconscious of it, it will always go straight by you. But if you're conscious of it, then, okay, why have I reacted like this? And you can also get these reactions from outside people. You do something and people react to it. So there's also this feedback. Because Jung said, just because it's about becoming an individual through the individuation process does not mean that it does not happen without other people outside. It's in concert with them. You cannot manage your shadow and integrate it when you're not able to deal with the person you're projecting the shadow on. Or you cannot integrate your anima as a man when you don't have a female partner, a girlfriend, a wife, a sister, a mother. So a female reference person, you are projecting your anima on anyways unconsciously, because you don't want to deal with it. It's projected. Only through that way you can start building this relationship. As Jung said, it's important as a diplomatic effort to integrate everything, not to push it away, not to repress it or kill it, but rather to integrate it, to build a relationship with it. And it's this aspect really of doing and experiencing. This separates us from animals, he says. Here's an example from the Bible. When God created the earth, and you have the animals and you have human beings, animals are like perfect. They fulfill the will of God 100%. They have their instincts and they just do that. And everything is dandy. So an animal will never start a world war or create weapons. It will not act against the will of God in that sense, that it will always follow its instinct. But human beings can do that. They can deny in the Bible God and do their own thing. But God loves humans more than he loves animals because of that possibility to have their own mind and to do their own thing and to move away from God. So God loves that, even though that they're moving away. But it's just a metaphor to show that the individuation process is about this being consciously aware and to remove oneself from collective forces to establish oneself as a separated, whole, individual, indivisible thing that exists then in the world and is contemplating what is happening to it. So Jung sees as the main duty of consciousness to get more consciousness, to grow bigger, to be more aware of things and to struggle more and more with it. So what he did not see as a useful way for individuation was drugs. He's talked especially about mescaline because it came up back then, because he said it's a huge difference whether your own psyche tells you something and brings you into certain directions by itself, or that you just lower your consciousness to a level where you then are in the unconscious and seeing all those noise, he said. He said if you take drugs to individuate, he said it won't do much because you become more aware of this perceptive things and of, yeah, a lot of noise and shininess, but the deep realization, he said, is not really possible because there has to be the right time for something to come up to be really understood. And suddenly all the things come up that the time is not ripe yet. So it's not clear whether Jung took drugs, but my suspicion is no, because he was a Swiss living in central Switzerland 100 years ago. And he was really, really conservative in his views. But yeah, he wrote about it in multiple letters where he said, oh, that's not the way to go. And there's also one very strong reason where I have to agree with him, because he says, when you make it the drug, your way of individuate, let's say, it's still an external thing. It's something from outside that makes you experience something inside. Yeah, but still an external thing. So it's not really coming outside of yourself. So you still have then a very strong relation to the outside, where Jung said you should try rather to separate yourself and be yourself and individuate and become an individual yourself. So having external help in that sense, he said, is not really helpful. He said when you individuate, or the individuation process is happening, there are strong dreams, symbolism associated with them, which are pretty special in that sense. And he talks a lot about the mandala being the symbol of the self as a way of having a structured symbol, which is circle very often, which four parts in it also, which is also rotating like the spiral motion of individuation. And he saw a lot of there are these four cognitive functions working now in harmony and are developed all at the same time, or let's say on the same level. And that these special kind of dreams that have a very strong impact, emotional also on the dreamer, are coming along with the process. And when, in the sense of the mandala, you have all the four functions at your disposal and present and integrated, it means you can view at the world in four different ways, which gives you a more accurate view on the complexity on the world than when you have only your superior function. You have also all these other things which are normally in conflict with each other are now in harmony. You have now a harmonious, unified thing. But he said there are also people with psychological problems, like people with psychosis or schizophrenia. They have, he said, wonderful individuation dreams. They're incredible. They're beautiful. But no one's home to really experience them, to contemplate them, to be fully aware of them, what they mean and what they mean about the dreamer. They're just like a little bit watching TV when you're half asleep. Can be amazing what's on the screen, but it's not really furthering your personal development. So it's, again, this idea that individuation is happening all by itself, but the question is whether you are there for the ride. So what I mentioned before was this already struggle with going into the deep, dark parts with the shadow and also with the anima and the animus, which can also be very unpleasant. He saw one reason why not everybody is individuated, everybody is enlightened on a higher plane of consciousness, is that it's a huge struggle and also a huge sacrifice, a painful, painful sacrifice, in the sense that he sees it as an ego death of the existing structure of ego and consciousness breaking apart. So everything, how you map the world and how you can act in the world, being brought down to make room for something else, to break up, to then reheal and integrate new things, because it's like a big filtering mechanism, the consciousness, and it can catch certain things and others not, but it should be able to catch everything. So it has to be changed. The thing is, it's you, it's how you experience the world and how you are, and this thing is then rebirthing, basically like the phoenix turning to ash and then rising out of the ashes again, which is a death procedure, where he said it's not very pleasant. And he said it's very ironic that his name is Jung, which is young in English, and he's so interested in this individuation renewal process of death and rebirth spiritually. And he said, for us Westerners again, the symbol of the self is Jesus Christ, and that this is in the collective unconscious cultural wise for the last 2,000 years. And the story is pretty clear. He dies on the cross. The cross is a point of maximum suffering, where I said, okay, yeah, that's when you're aware of all the opposite and all the conflict, it's a point of maximum suffering. And last event, I had a talk afterwards with Stefan, and we talked about Fight Club and how Jack shoots himself in the neck at the end of the movie. And this is the point where he integrates the other, which is Tyler, by realizing that Tyler Durden is really part of himself, to really have this click. This is actually me. And to be able to sacrifice himself to reach this higher plane, which in the case of Fight Club, shooting himself in the neck. And Jung stresses it that the sacrifice means you can only sacrifice what you have. You have to be, in a sense, removed from yourself, removed from your ego, to say, okay, this is one version of me, that's one part of me, but it's not everything. And to be everything, this part has to go. This does not mean that you should put bodily harm on yourself. This is really not advice in that regard, but it's realizing that being in a suffering state and in a conflicted state is a way of individuation, and it's a way of pushing through and being reborn on the other side, but you have to get on the other side. And that is a really uncomfortable thing. So what does it look like at the end when you suffer through? Jung said in that stage of the individuated stage, where you're realizing the self, that it means that you're able to be completely aware of the conflict and of the opposites and of the irreconcilability of different aspects of reality. That is always there. So like, no conflict means you're not aware. But if you experience a conflict, that you've, in an individuated way, are able to separate yourself from it. You're in it in the sense that you experience it and you are aware of it, but you're still above it. You're removed from your own thing. And he said at that point, you're pretty much at ease in the sense that you're removed, you're calm. So the world outside is raging still. Everything that's bad is still happening. But you found your own place in yourself that's able to deal with that and not to turn away from it or repress it, but rather to accept it as it is. And he really stresses this point of attitude, to be open for everything, but also to contemplate it. So not only to open the door, but to let in what comes inside and to sit down with it, have a talk, and being aware of the individuality, to really be aware of the parts that make one oneself. And went through this journey of differentiation and saying like, oh no, this is actually what the outside world wants from me. And oh, this is actually what the inside world wants of me. And being able to separate what is what. And this is already a tremendous, tremendous effort. And it's the struggle of the ego and the consciousness. And I'm going to conclude with a very nice metaphor, or picture or image, which is supposed to symbolize what the position of the ego of oneself could be in that situation. And that it's really this idea of having these ancient patterns of behavior, which is the archetypes and the collective unconscious being the archetypes, which are eternal and, let's say, blind. They're just like programs running their script indiscriminate about you or the world or anything. And to have those and bring them together with the world, how it is today and with your individuality and your individual experiences, because your experiences, your world, your story in the world is what makes you you. And this connecting between how it is today with all the idiosyncratic things that happen to you, to find it in and connect it to the overarching big themes of being a human being, to be alive and be in the middle and try to connect that this incredibly immediate now and the eternal on the other side and bring them together within oneself to really bring everything together about oneself and also the outside, and to be really this third component between those opposites that are in a sense completely removed from each other but otherwise connected through oneself. And that would be my presentation for individuation and all the things that Jung talked about when he talked about individuation. And I want to say thank you for listening.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. During an event, a discussion part follows after the presentation where all attendees discuss the just presented topic or other Jungian concepts. If you also want to join, find the group on meetup.com. The name of the group is CG Jung Help Desk. Also make sure to subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. See you next time.